You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 9th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is my friend Jim Allen. How you doing, bud? You staying warm?
Yeah, I'm really good tonight. I mean, things are going well. The weather's nice. It's Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to you all.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and the fathers, too, because you guys got to work on this day, too. So happy Mother's Day to you.
Mm.
Jim says, I don't believe that. And it's like, yeah, you have to plan something. You've got to get flowers, or you got to
go to
a restaurant, or you got to do the dishes, you know, or do some chores that they don't have to do. You have to do something. You can't just sit around and say Happy Mother's Day and smile.
What of those things do I, well, I don't get flowers. She's not a big flower person, but I'm thinking of all those other things. What are the things I don't do every day anyway?
Right. Well, if you have lots of brownie points stacked up, you can sit around on your butt. The rest of us have to work.
Well, when I do that stuff, my wife calls me mom, you know, which is a huge compliment. I used to kind of take it as an insult, but I'll take it as a compliment.
All right. Well, I'm not going to do that, but good.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a conversation with former Fighters and Buffaloes infielder Bobby Scales. We're going to discuss another perfect mess that we've gotten ourselves into with Yudai Ono. We've got Rockin' with Roki, and we're going to handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I caught up with former Fighters and Buffaloes infielder Bobby Scales on Wednesday morning, Japan time. He's in Atlanta now. He's an executive with Sports Info Solutions. So he's looking at the game from a slightly different perspective. The last time we had him on the show, it was December in 2019, show 39 that year, and he was doing player development with the Pirates, and just a different kind of career path has taken him outside of that, and he's looking at the game from a different perspective. Now, his career in NPB probably didn't go the way he had planned it, but I thought it was pretty effective in what he did here. It's a very hard jump, and I think a lot of foreign players come over and learn that. And you'll hear him talk about it in the interview that, you know, the game was basically designed the same. It looked the same from the outside, but it wasn't the same on the inside. And Bobby has a real nice setup at his house to talk and do interviews. I was jealous. He has a big boom mic, and he's got great equipment. He sounds really good on the interview. He weighs in on some topics, for example, from the profile of the Japanese position players who go to the big leagues now, to Roki Sasaki. So he's got some opinions. So let's take a listen to Bobby Scales. Joining us from Atlanta is former Nippon Ham Fighters and Oryx infielder Bobby Scales. Good to see you again, bro.
I'm glad to be on. I'm glad to see you again. Absolutely. Yeah,
you look well. You're doing well. Let's get right into it. When folks find out that you played in MPB, what questions do you get?
Well, the first question is always, what was it like over there? And that's obviously such a broad question, but you know, that's the main one. Then you just kind of start telling your story as a player, like in terms of how you ended up over there and the experience. My stock answer is that, you know, basically it was baseball because we had uniforms and bats and gloves and balls, and it was four bases and a pitcher's mound. Yeah, and some umpires. But other than that, it was a completely different experience. I will say this. I mean, Japan was ahead of its time with a couple things. The first being, like, you know, the replay situation, and then having the umpire explain to the crowd what's going on. Like, I find it hilarious. Everybody was up in arms over here. Oh, it's going to ruin this. It's going to ruin that. Well, first of all, that's stupid, because we've been doing that in football for years and years and years. And then secondly, Japan's been doing this. I mean, I played over there in 11 and 12 when they were doing it then. So like everybody just calm down and relax and enjoy being informed about what's happening. But, you know, back to the question you asked, like I said, the baseball experience was just so different, with the strategy and the way they went about teaching some of the things in the game. just the gameplay, you know, the no score defense is one I just don't understand it. No one could ever make me understand it. But I always finish with this. Overall, it was a tremendous experience. I'm very glad I did it. And it's one of those things in life that the further you get away from it and the more you look back on it, the more you realize you learned. And it was really a transformational experience for me as a player, even late in my career. And also it really helped the way I looked at certain things as an administrator and a coach later on.
Okay. Now, what do you tell people about MPB players, like especially guys who make up the national team that's really one of the dominant squads on the international stage?
Yeah, I think the biggest strength that the Japanese player that I saw in the Japanese player, and this is a very broad generalization, is that those guys do not beat themselves. Very few mistakes. They execute. The Japanese player is a very efficient player. The work ethic is legendary. We know that. And sometimes it's work to excess, and understand that's part of the culture. That's the beauty of sport. Sport reflects our culture. You know, regardless of where you are in the world, it's going to be a reflection of the society you live in to a certain extent. But it's a very, the Japanese baseball player is a very efficient player. They're going to do a lot of things well, and the Japanese baseball player will not beat themselves. And so once you get all those guys on a national team who have a ton of talent, let's not escape the fact that these guys are talented too. They're just not highly skilled. They're also talented players and talented athletes. I don't want to diminish that at all. But you're going to have to show up and execute to beat the Japanese national team and to out execute a group of Japanese players, because they simply don't beat themselves. And that's a quality I think is just incredible.
Now, you played here, and you know we know what your career is like here. What's important to know about making that adjustment when you come to you go to a different country and you're trying to learn their style of baseball and their brand of play?
Yeah, I tell guys this. I go, you're not going over there. First of all, you're not going to change anybody. They're going to do what they do. And I can't speak to other countries in terms of like, well, I can. I played in Mexico. Like, you're not going to change the way they play the game. You're not going to change the way they coach the game. You're not going to change some of the strategic things. So if you don't have an open mind, that's not a place for you to go, because you're not going to change them. You're going to have to really, you know, bring your ego back, swallow some pride, and have an open mind as to the way the game is being played. Now, the fortunate thing about my situation when I went over there was that they didn't try to change what I did or how I did it. I think there's enough respect from the teams and the coaches there to know that, okay, our guy selected you as a guy that they thought could come over. We're not going to try to change who you are fundamentally as a player, but there are some things we're going to ask you to do within the context of the team, within the context of playing the game, that are going to be different, you know. And if you don't go over there with an open mind, it's going to be a tough road to go for you. I think the second piece is, you're not going over there for the quote unquote experience. This is not an experience. You have to go play well. Like, if you don't play well, then they will part with the money and they will send you home, or they will send you to the Japanese minor leagues. And nobody wants to be in Nigun, right? So anywhere, okay? Nobody wants to be in the minors anywhere in the world. Let's just clarify that right now. I mean, so yeah. Nobody wants to be in the minors anywhere in the world. So you're not there for the experience. You're not there to play baseball and then go see sights on the weekends. I mean, if it works, great. But I wasn't there for that. I was there to help the both teams that I played for win. I was there to try to get better. There were some things that I could do, taking the sights in and taking the culture in, but I was there to do a job, and there, to have an open mind and just do the best I could to help both those clubs that I played for win games.
Seiya Suzuki, he kind of profiles differently from most Japanese hitters. I'm not sure how much you've gotten to see him this season. And so does Shohei Ohtani, and so does Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, if you ask me. So with guys like that making the move to the States, is the impression among major league folks changing about what the Japanese player or the Japanese hitter is?
Changing. I don't know. I think guys are smart enough to realize that there's a wide variety of player that's coming over. I mean, I'll say this, you know, it took humongous stones to let Ohtani do both things, both pitch and hit, and you see what he's doing. And this guy has absolutely changed the game. You know, the Japanese, the Asian player on, you know, as a whole, you know, they used to, it's contact oriented approach, this, that, and the other. Well, you know, Hideki Matsui has been retired for a minute and he had a boatload of homers and punched out a lot. So I don't know that stereotype still holds true to form. I mean, you had Aoki, which was, if you're in the stereotypes, yeah, he was a stereotypical guy, very rarely struck out, put the ball in play all over the place, used the whole field. You know, so I think that has evolved enough now to where these guys are just, they are who they are and they're fine with that. And the teams do enough due diligence to figure out, yeah, we want to acquire this player, and they go after him and let the chips fall where they may. So I don't know that the stereotype is still that stereotype of the small slap hitter that can really run, that kind of guy. I don't know that that's still too much of a thing.
Okay. Now, you played behind Yu Darvish. I don't know what you've observed of him through the years, but how has he adjusted to Major League Baseball through the years, as far as you can tell?
Well, I mean, tremendous. His stuff is still otherworldly. I think, you know, his biggest downfall has been Ohtani being on another planet. You know, like, seriously, I mean, because Darvish's stuff is still filth. I mean, the pitches he's able to throw out of virtually the same arm slot and still have enough velocity. He's gotten hurt and come back. I mean, he's had adversity. He's played for a number of teams. The dude is still amazing. He's still a top tier pitcher. Is he the dominant number one guy he once was? Probably, maybe not, but he's still tremendous. You know, the eyeball test tells you that, and then his objective numbers tell you that too. Yeah, the answer to that question is short is yeah. I mean, he's really adjusted to playing baseball here in the West. And, you know, look, he's got enough talent. He could play baseball anywhere and it wouldn't matter. He's that good. Right. And so, you know, it's one of those situations, have game, will travel, and his game travels anywhere in the world. So, he's definitely adjusted. I think, you know, I will say this. One of the things that I said, my God, 10 years ago now, was that, I mean, he's a big man. He's a big body. He's a big man. And that he will hold up, and he's held up. Yeah. He had TJ, but everybody has TJ nowadays. It's like standard operating procedure.
Yeah, it's like a sprained ankle.
It's unbelievable. That's a whole nother discussion, yeah. You know, but yeah, I mean, he's held up, and part of it wasn't just the fact that he was big. I mean, he was one of the few guys that was really getting after it in the gym when I was playing in Japan. I mean, in 11 and 12, I mean, he would go in there and get after it. And you just didn't see a lot of guys go in there and do that. But he had a goal in mind, and it was to play in the big leagues and be a dude. And he's backed that up in every sense of the word.
All right. One last question before you go. How's the Roki Sasaki fever going on over there? I know you get a 20-year-old throwing back-to-back perfect games, essentially. It's created a lot of uproar and a lot of eyes on Japan and a lot of expectations of him jumping over to the major leagues soon. And I'm like, slow down, peeps. But yeah, well, how's the fever going over there?
No, it's real. I mean, people are taking notice. I don't care what league you're doing it in. You do what he did over an 18-inning stretch. That's ridiculous. Like, you can't. That's video games. That's like MLB The Show or video game type stuff. And so you have to take notice. You're foolish not to. And there's been a lot of, you know, stuff written about him. And a lot of, you know, he's gotten a lot of press, even here in the States. And you know, I've been very interested in seeing it too. I think that, you know, it's the posting system still the same. So he's got to stay for what, 8, right?
Essentially,
yeah,
we don't know what backdoor deals that have been made with the team, and the team has really got the kid gloves on for him, and they're babying him, and that's good. But it seems like that's a long-term plan, and I don't think they're doing that for the major league specifically.
Right.
I think they're doing it for the player and for his future career.
And that's good.
They want to benefit from it as well.
Sure. I mean, listen, I mean, and I hate to the core of my being, and I don't say hate often, I hate when people or teams in the media or otherwise, or behind closed doors or otherwise, I hate when they call a player an asset. That is a player. He is a human. He is a man. He has a mother and a father and loved ones. He is not an asset. but he is a person of high interest because of what he can do for the club, and I understand why they're protecting it. This kid has a chance to be a generational talent, and they should protect him. They're doing right by him, and they're also doing right by the club. Now, I read the article that Jim wrote the other day, and talked about how, and this is really, you know, it's very different than we've heard about things that happen more typically in Japan, where the guys just throw and throw, and they pitch, especially in the Koshien tournament. You know, you've heard all the stories about Darvish and Tanaka and our guy Yuki Saito, you know, the handkerchief prince, and the guy was never the same guy, you know. I'm glad they're doing this. I'm glad they're saying, no, he's pitching on this schedule and this is what it is. I'm glad his high school coach took care of him. I'm glad as a fan, I want to see this kid. I want to see him have a nice long career. I want to see him dominate people. That's good for the game. It's good for the game in Japan. It's good for the game. Hopefully at some point in his career in the United States, it's good for the game globally. When its best players are sound and healthy and able to perform. And so people can see them. So, he's generating a ton of interest. He's generating a ton of ink and press over here, and people are interested. And I hope that like you said, I hope he has a nice long career and he stays healthy. And at some point, you know, we see him here in the United States.
All right. Well, we hope to see you soon sometime. You got to make a visit out here.
I want to. I'd love to come back out there. I enjoyed my time in Japan. It was you know, 10, like I said, 10 years on, every day, you know, you think about it, or somebody reminds you of your time in Japan, you think about something else. And it was a very nice, it was a very good time, and I grew a lot from it. So I'd love to come back over.
All right. Well, thank you for your time today.
You bet. Always.
All right. So thank you so much, Bobby. He's obviously been reading jballallen.com, and I love what he said about the Japanese hitter profile. And I like his comment about Darvish, but what did you like about that particular chat, Jim?
Well, thank you for the shout out. I have to say first, it's always great to talk to you. We typically, you know, when I heard you interviewed him, it's typically Bobby and I see each other at the winter meetings, which hasn't happened for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And he's had an amazingly varied career. So I wasn't really surprised to see him go to Sports Info Solutions, because he's done a lot of tech stuff as well as baseball stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was very happy, and I think it's just more experience into the things he can do. So that was really fun. Y'all, great stuff from him. I love the one about not only, you know, I was going to bring my, I don't know what, torture devices and see if I could get him to understand the no score defense, but I'll give up.
That's amazing. He's out there doing it, and you got to believe we've had some players talk to us on the show before saying, mm-hmm. Look, you have to take yourself out of the equation and do what the coaches want. And but you can hear you can hear it. It's still like, I don't want to walk here and do this, but if this is the way you're going to play it, I'll do it. So still has him rubbed the wrong way.
yeah. But that was great. And the whole bit about learning, and we've talked a lot about that in the past, but I think a couple of things that really struck me. One is he said, well, he was referring, first of all, he referred to his team specifically when he said, mm-hmm. You know, they weren't going to change what you do fundamentally, and they trust their scouts. Now that is his experience, which I'll call the Bobby Valentine syndrome, which is, you know, this is how it happened for me. So this is how Japanese baseball is.
Right.
And
this is how it happened for me in two organizations.
Yeah. Well, that was how it started with the Fighters, obviously, because the Fighters have the scouts have really long time scouts. So That one was probably right. And I think that is common now, especially now that most of the teams have former players who are scouts. Mm-hmm. And they worked for them for a while, and they've been around, and they know what's what. So I think that's the norm. But we still see sometimes when players come over, and my favorite... My favorite case was a first baseman named John Zuber in 2001 with the Yokohama Bay Stars, and manager Masaaki Mori in his last managing legs after his Cebu days, looked at this big first baseman and said, you know, he's going to hit for power in Japan. And Zuber had never hit more than 9 home runs in a season in his life.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Yokohama Stadium. The ball carries.
Right, exactly. But he was – this is a guy who basically was built to get on base like at a 400 clip. Mm-hmm. He was a – you know, he hit the ball hard at a fairly low trajectory, and he drew lots of walks. You know, okay. I mean, he was basically a number one, number two hitter kind of guy. Well, not number two, because he was too good of a hitter to bat second for Mori. So, so they tried to do it and basically ruined him. And then they blamed the guy for not being the guy that they thought they could turn him into.
Right.
Gosh, how we haven't heard. It was like I don't know, like the results of like couples counseling or something. Anyway, so there was that. There was a case, of course. Gail Hopkins told me that when he was recruited to play for the Hiroshima Carp by their manager Joe Lutz, they told him. Joe said, "Look, I know you can be a power hitter," and he said, "No, I can't. I've never done it." He says, "Trust me, you can do it," and he did it. You know, and so sometimes telling players they can do something more is a thing, but just predicting offhand that this is the kind of player you are when you aren't is, I've seen it so many times in Japan, but I think it is, as Bobby said, it's something that's getting pretty scarce. The bit about, it took stones for the fighters. It sure did. You know, they had to do it to recruit Shohei Ohtani as a two-way player. They had to do it because they had to keep him in Japan. Otherwise, he was going to go sign in with an MLB team as an 18-year-old pitcher. They didn't really have a choice. Mm. And they took a ton of flack for that. They took just abuse. And I wrote this week, there's a really good hitting guy who pitches for the Hanshin Tigers, Junya Nishi, and this kid can really hit. He can hit like Takaya Ishikawa can hit. At least he did in high school. They were very similar.
Ishikawa, yeah,
of the Dragons, right? They were on the same under-18 World Cup team for Japan, and Nishi was the DH as well as a pitcher. He was a two-way guy for Japan. But the Tigers said, you know what the Tigers would say? Somebody's going to criticize us. No way. We're not doing that. So I don't know if that's the story, but I'm guessing that was the story, that the real reason is the Tigers couldn't really deal with in that hothouse media environment they live in. They couldn't deal with the kind of stuff the fighters took.
Right.
So,
right.
Anyway, so yeah, it did take stones, and I just thought that the whole thing, he's just, Bobby's just a delightful guy. And I always love the various angles that he attacks issues in baseball. That sure. It's always, always a joy.
Yeah. We had quite the conversation before and after the recorded chat. So yeah, it was fun. And he made a lot of comments in this talk as well, but I wish I could comment on everything, but we were going to have to move along. So I'm just going to pick out a couple things quickly. And that's that the umpires jumping on the mic. So now my desire isn't to have them explain the obvious. And I think obviously the MLB fans just not used to that kind of thing. And we've been seeing it in Japan for a long time, but the umpires don't generally jump on the mic and tell us the obvious things like the ball is foul. They jump on the mic to explain. So a lot of times in the MLB, what I've seen is the umpires just run to the back room and they're checking something, but they don't tell us what exactly is being challenged. And so that still is left up to speculation for the most part. I mean, we know baseball. We know exactly what the rules are. We know the general rules, and we know in most occasions what they're checking. But there's some instances I think the umpires could say, or just mimic what goes on in Japan. We are checking to see if, you know, the runner actually did this, that, or the other. And I think the big boss, Tsuyoshi Shinjo, had a review either today or yesterday on a play at second base. The umpire ruled that the ball was dropped on the transfer, but the fielder never caught the ball. And it was pretty obvious on the replay, and we could see that. So I don't think the umpires have to go back and let us know about that. But this jumping on the mic thing, I thought was pretty silly that people were up in arms about it. It's just, you know, it's just to get off my lawn, guys, just, you know, getting their ride on lawnmowers and try to mow people over with with this, their oldness. That was one thing.
And then, hey, man, don't be going after people's oldness. That's my trump card, baby.
Yeah, but you're not trying to mow people down with it. So we're
no, not today. I took a break.
Obviously, things change in the game. And I just the thing that I see, and that it seems like Bobby was talking about, some of the ways that Japanese teams go about, I mean, he wasn't specific, but like the no scoring defense, those kinds of things, and the aspects of the game that I think Japan is really not interested in changing, and probably some of the bunting, a lot of the old school type of approach, maybe that can change too here in Japan. But like I've always said on the show, I think we don't bunt enough in the States, and they bunt too much here. And someone asked me today, they said, now, you know, are there players in NPB who coaches or managers wouldn't ask them to bunt? And I said, there are a few on each team probably who guys who probably can't do it and guys who probably shouldn't be doing it. I can't see, especially the way he's hitting now, Hotaka Yamakawa of the Lions being asked to bunt. That's not really his game either. I'm sure he's not very good at it, but there might be a time that he is. So he is asked to bunt. So it just depends. But yeah, great chat from Bobby. We appreciate his time. It was good catching up with him. And I really hope he comes to visit, at least in Japan. I was talking about a visit. I think he was talking about a job. So we'll see how that works out. I'm like, yeah, hopefully I can find that thing before you do. But let's move along. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the perfect miss that occurred at Nagoya Dome, or if you want to call it Vantolin Dome, that's fine, on Friday night. So we had Yudai Ono of the Chunichi Dragons. And gosh, I tweeted it about maybe after the sixth inning. Man, if this guy, I'd rather have him give up a hit than go nine innings perfect and have to lose that because his team can't score a run. And we had the imperfect game from Roki Sasaki on April 17th, and he got the hook after eight innings. And then we had a similar, I don't know if it's the opposite, but it's a similar instance in which a guy throws his nine innings of perfect baseball, but because his team doesn't have a run, they go into extra innings. And with two outs, Ono gives up a hit to Teruaki Sato of the Hanshin Tigers, a double. And not only that, it's a scoreless game. So if there's another hit and he comes along around to score, he's in grave danger of losing this game, which he threw nine perfect innings. So luckily, he got the third out in that inning, and the Dragons scored in the bottom of the 10th for a 1-0 victory. And great game for Ono. I was watching. I was listening from the start, but I didn't actually turn it on until he got to the fourth inning. And then as I was watching the game, I was at the office, and you could see the fielders actually starting to tighten up, and they were clutching the ball when they would be hit a ground ball or whatever, the guys on the infield. They were trying to be too careful and very careful. And Ono's not a dominating pitcher. He might get a no-hitter again, or he might have this perfect game situation, but he's not going to strike out a bunch of guys like Sasaki did. It's going to be nervy for all the fielders. What did you observe? That's right. We talked about this before we actually started recording, so you didn't get to see any of it?
I didn't see any of it because I was completely focused on Roki. I wasn't even looking at any of the other games. I was completely watching the Marines game. And then I go, oh, hold on a second. There was another game here.
A quite exciting one. So, yeah, what did you hear about it? What did you see about it? What did you get it?
What I heard was that Ohno came out after the ninth inning, after he retired 27 straight batters. He was sitting down having a drink of water in the back of the dugout, and the manager, Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, who had kind of a busy week, came over and said, "You're done, right? You're finished, right?" And the thing is, and I wrote about this in my blog a bit, Tatsunami has had an image. He's projected this image of sort of channeling his mentor, Senichi Hoshino. And I think this is where it really came out. Well, Hoshino, it was such a big, sweet, wonderful guy, but he also could be a pain in the butt. And he would do it on purpose. He would aggravate players to get them to do what he wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the thing. I think he wanted them to go out and, you know, and pitch like his pants were on fire in the 10th inning. So he basically said, "You're done, right? We don't need you to pitch the 10th inning." And so Ohno said afterwards, he said, if it had been young guy pitching like Yuya Yanagi, then right. Tatsunami would have come over and said, "Oh, I need you to pitch the 10th, right? You're going to go out there, right? Go for it."
Would have been the opposite approach, huh?
Exactly. And he said, so he went out and said, "I'll show him, you know, and so I'm pitching the 10th, buddy. Get out of my way, Junior."
I love it. I love it. Yeah. So Ohno had only five strikeouts, and obviously didn't walk anybody, and the one hit, and it was a fastball, I believe. I think they were trying to throw it off the plate outside, and he got it over the middle, and it probably would have been called a ball. And Sato bangs it into the gap in right center and gets a double. So long to the perfection and all that stuff. So he was one out away. They ended up scoring that run. What could have been, you know, so I'm calling it the perfect miss. Mm. But what a fun game in terms of just the both pitchers. And lost in this was Aoyagi, who went nine and a third innings, and he only gave up five hits and a couple walks and the one run, and he struck out six, and he was fantastic as well. He didn't match him, you know, out for out, but he matched him zero for zero until they got to the 10th inning. So a great pitching feat by him as well. Just one inning too many. In fact, you know, when you get into that situation, I think for the managers, there's no time to go out there and pull a guy off the mound. And he gave up a couple runners in the 10th inning. You're not going to pull him at that point. Both pitchers, I think Ohno threw 120 pitches. Aoyagi finished with 109. So he wasn't overworked in terms of pitch count. But it's a long night. It was a long night. And I joked with somebody at the office before I left. I said, "Look at the way they're zipping through this game. Usually, you know, you count three innings, usually take an hour to finish." And it was like 6:45 and we were in the fifth inning, the top of the fifth inning. And I'm like, this is way too fast. Either they're not, you know, getting any hits, or they're swinging at the first pitch, and turns out they weren't getting any hits either side, pretty much.
Well, yeah, this game, the other thing, and we were chatting about a little bit, there are some sort of like shadows of the past going on here, because I know Jason Koskri tweeted that this was the first time that a player had lost a perfect game in extra innings since Fumiya Nishiguchi of the Cebu Lions did in 2005. So we had that going, and that was another, I think, scoreless. That was another scoreless game, of course. And another thing that happened was it was the first time that two pitchers had completed an extra inning game. Both starters had completed an extra inning game since 2007. So that was 14 years. And that was Daisuke Miura beat Shohei Tateyama, the Swallows.
Wow.
And also a walk-off.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Walk, you know, probably Miura might be the only one who remembers it. And, you know, that was also a walk-off in Yokohama. And to go back to the Nishiguchi one I mentioned, you know, we were talking about before that Nishiguchi and Yudai Ohno have the same birth date.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they were born on the same day, and that reminded me of what Nishiguchi said to Kona Takahashi last year, I think, when Takahashi lost a no-hitter in the ninth inning, because he wears Nishiguchi's number 13. He said, kid, you should have worn a different number.
Yeah, Kona.
So I imagine him saying, you should have had a different birthday.
you should have held out.
Although if he said that, I'd be surprised if he said that and told anybody, because Nishiguchi is one of the absolute worst ever pitcher interviews, because he'd just go, yep, nope, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I was listening to the game a lot on radio, and Masahiro Yamamoto, the Dragons lefty legend, was doing the color commentary, and he essentially threw a 28-out no-hitter that I covered, and that was because there was an error on the first ball hit of the game. Masahiko Morino made an error at third, and then Yamamoto retired the next 27 batters, so I called it a 28-out no-hitter. And at the end of the game, the announcer said, well, he doesn't get credit for a perfect game. And Yamamoto said, he does in my book. He just stopped him in his tracks. He said, no, he gets credit for a perfect game in my book. And he threw nine innings, and that's really hard to do. So, but the important thing I thought was that he got the win. He didn't have to walk away with nothing. No decision would be gut-wrenching, and a loss would be that would warrant going crazy in the locker room, I would imagine. You idiots can't score one run in 10 innings, I would kind of go crazy. So I'm just glad he got the win so that he could smile at the very end. And Tatsunami was talking about that too in the Hero interview. Geez, we needed to score before that, but I'm glad we won, but we needed to score before that. But he says that almost every game that they score, because they win a lot of 2-1, 1-0, 3-2 games. Although they lost a game today when they scored three runs, and I thought that really must hurt. Poor guy. Yeah. They score a week's worth of runs in a game and they lose.
Yeah, it's been a tough week.
So what are you thinking? I'm thinking we had essentially with the 10-inning gem that Ona puts together, we've essentially had three perfect games this season, if you count Roki Sasaki's 8-2. You put that together with the 9.2 of Ono. We're almost there for three perfect
games. We're almost there. Of course, Sasaki had retired the batter before that. He started that streak, so he had 52 in a row.
So there. So you can count it. So What are your thoughts, though? Is there something going on here that we should take a closer look at? The pitching is way ahead of the hitting in some cases, because we had the opposite, too. We had a 16-0 shutout this past weekend as well. Is it just weird? Is just some of the anomalies, or should we keep an eye out on potential no-hitters the rest of the season?
I don't know. Well, Roki Sasaki's pitching Friday, so that's always a possibility.
Every time he takes the mound, huh?
Yeah, well, he's going to be pitching, except that this time he's going to be pitching back at Osaka Dome, which he said he didn't like the mound. It was too steeper than he's used to, so maybe they'll build him a little practice mound. Or they'll have him do some extra, maybe have him pitch bat live BP from the pitcher's mound. One day, he can't, cuz it'll be Friday. It'll be the first game of the series, so he can't do that.
We'll build you a little kid's mound over here. You can practice on that. Work your way up.
No, you can't. I'm using it.
Yeah, you're using it to kill the worms in the dome there. Can you reach home plate on the fly, you think, from the mound? I'm kidding.
Probably not.
I'm kidding. You didn't have to answer. You're not obligated to answer that.
Thank you. Okay. Right. Well, now you tell me. What is this? The Miranda? You should have Mirandized me to start with.
These
remarks. Call my attorney next time.
Anything you say will definitely be used against you. In fact, we're going to crack you over the head with it. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the first player of the month group that we're going to have. It's going to include late March and then April. And first of all, let's see. We've obviously got Roki Sasaki in the Pacific League. the Raywell rock star. So that's not even a question. He went 3-0. He had a 1.50 ERA, a whip of 0.50. That's nutty, like the Fruit Loops kind of nutty. His K rate was 15 per nine innings. 60 strikeouts and 36 innings pitched, the perfect game, an 8-inning perfect outing, and everyone likes him. So he's going to win the popular vote as well.
Yep, as well as the Electoral College. Yeah, indeed. So he's, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Although I had this flashback thought, and as we said, they've switched around the voting a little bit, or at least the voting results have been different than they were a few years ago. Used to be, if you had a pitcher who was 4-0 and he had an ERA under 4, he pretty much won the award.
Right.
And one year, I'm going to say it was 2015, when 2014 or 2015, Shohei Ohtani went, he pitched 4 games. He had an ERA of about 0.9. He had 2 shutouts. He won two shutouts, and he went 2-0. But because they didn't give starting pitchers who won 2 games in a month the MVP, they gave it to somebody who went 4-0 with a 3.8 ERA and 5 strikeouts.
Right. But you said now they're changing that up, you think?
Yeah, they've been a little more open-minded. You know, it's now when they do the little reviews on the NPB website, they'll include really radical things like he led the league in runs or on base percentage. You know, it's like communists or anarchists are running it. What happened to the good old days when the only thing that mattered was wins, saves, home runs, RBIs, and batting average? I mean,
someone who had doing it in the past got to the magic age and they retired the person and they brought in somebody younger.
Could
maybe
be.
That's what happened.
Well, sometimes death works like that, but we'll see.
Whoa.
Hashtag high heat.
I'm throwing the ball high and tight and you're just hitting the guy in the head here, right?
Yeah, well, I didn't intend to hit him in the head, but we'll buy flowers for his funeral.
Yeah.
Not that I could throw a ball that would dent bread, but anyway.
Okay. All right. What about hitters? I did want to talk about some other guys, actually.
Okay.
I know that they're not going to win, but Eni Romero, before he had a bad outing in May here, actually two, he was the ERA leader at 0.34 over 4 starts, 26 in the third innings pitched, and Kodai Senga was 3-0 with a 0.95 ERA. And there were a bunch of guys who just had an ERA under 1 for a long time. It kind of got higher later in the month, but these guys were really, really doing the job. And like I was thinking, I said about the pitching in the perfect games, is I'm wondering if we were seeing something here early in the season with these top-level pitchers. And I'm not sure that Romero classifies or profiles in that area, but he certainly had, you know, he had pitched in the, he went to the States and had pitched a little bit in the major leagues and came back after pitching with the Dragons. So he's back in Japan this year. So he is at least a pitcher with some ability, we know. And even though he hasn't had luck or whatever is going on with him the past 2 outings, he was superb early on in the season. So I just wanted to recognize these guys. Ayumu Ishikawa, also of the Marines, he was 0.87 and 3-1 in the month, but I don't think those guys have a chance.
No, it took me a couple of minutes, you know, going sifting through the PL pitchers and then think, oh, who's this Sasaki kid? Okay.
Chihaya?
I mean, I did. Wait. I was, well, basically, I start, you know, I'll look, you know, count wins and ERA, and, you know, we've got guys who won 4 games, and we got guys with microscopic ERAs. And then, hold on a second. What am I even, you know, why am I even doing this? Okay. Right. So, yeah.
Sit down, son. You did a great job. Sit down. Sit down. Exactly. In the back there. Sit down. Yes. Grab a seat. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think he's going to get it because it'll give somebody, we'll get to write more about him.
Right. Yeah. Well, the PL, I can tell you this, anytime he's in one of the PL, the YouTube channel videos, they get played a lot of times. They get a lot of hits. So then that's Sasaki we're talking about. All right. Mm-hmm. What about hitters? Now, this I didn't think was that much of a race, but when you look into the numbers, it kind of is. So who did you have?
Well, I'm going to give my non-vote to Haruki Nishikawa.
Oh, your non-vote.
Yeah, because nobody asks me, which never stopped me from talking.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see. I thought you were saying that you weren't going to give him a vote. But
no,
you're
no,
saying...
No. I'm
going
to say nobody cares what
vote,
I think.
Yeah, your vote doesn't count, but you're still throwing it in. I got you.
Yeah. Okay, led the PL in runs. He was tied for second with 5 home runs, was third in RBIs with 21, which is pretty good for a leadoff hitter. Now, 10 years ago, as I made this comment before, Go Matsumoto and his 418 batting average would have won hands down.
Yes.
Yeah, like the time that Doichi Odachi won by hitting 400 with all singles and no walks. It basically did nothing except hit 400.
Happy you were.
I was over the moon, baby.
Yes. Over the moon and
ready to crash. Yeah. I was going ballistic. Okay. So he's my guy. He's my guy this month. Yeah.
Yeah. I brought him up on the show a couple weeks back, I think, and said, you know, this guy, I don't know if the fighters letting him go lit a fire under him, or if it was the fact that he's in a different environment or whatever it is. Anyway, he was tearing it up. I think you're right. He's got all these, what he's had, 21 RBIs that didn't lead the month, but it was up there among them. And his OPS is above 1,000. So, yeah, I think he's going to get it if they look at the other things. But, yeah, Matsumoto with the 418 batting average. And he came out of nowhere. I really wasn't paying much attention to him because he didn't really have the at-bats. And then all of a sudden, because he was producing, he got more at-bats. And because he got more at-bats and kept producing, all of a sudden, he popped up on this list and he was at the top. So I think he's going to get heavy consideration. I actually think it's going to be quite the race, except for the fact that, it shouldn't be. But I think a 400, a 418 versus a 333, people hit 333 for a month sometimes. The 400 really is going to light up the eyes of these guys.
Well, sure. It's not really surprising if you see a guy who's basically a 230 career hitter hit 330 for a month. That kind of stuff happens. Just
right.
But 418 is, you know, you got to be closer to the 280, 290, 300 to get that range.
Right. So yeah, and he didn't really produce much, but you know, it's 418. You know, a lot of teams would like to have that. So we'll see how that goes, and then. You know, we did not see a lot from Hotaka Yamakawa, particularly in this month. And he was deactivated early on because he was injured. But he has been banging pitchers like a woodpecker drills away at trees probably this past week. So he's definitely the early leader or the leader in the clubhouse right now for May. We're not even halfway through, but he's on pace, I heard. One site I saw said 80 plus, another site I saw it said 70 home runs. So if he can continue this for any period of time, even another week or so, he's going to be the MVP favorite among the media members here. Again, his team is not, in terms of the standings, his team's not high enough, but they're in the top three, and I think that'll do it for the MVP voters here the way they've gone in the past. But he does not qualify that high up on the March and April list, but he is definitely leading in May. So
he had a heck of a week this week too. I mean, he had that one where he hit a whole bunch of home runs, and then the one time they decided, well, we're not going to face him. We'll force Takuya Nakamura to beat us, and then bam. And then he hit a home run in the ninth inning. Yeah, then he hits a home run in the ninth inning. It's like, thanks for the free walk. I needed a break.
Tired of beating on you guys. And I was telling someone today, I said, look, a lot of times they're not even throwing him strikes. Today, the two home runs he hit were on pitches. One was a, if that wasn't a mistake, it was a mistake to not throw it out of the zone. The other one was kind of high. So, again, he's for May. So we will set him aside and talk about him next month. What about the Central League now? We'll start with the pitchers there. And I think CC Mercedes of the Giants has the 4-0 record. I'm not sure he has the other stats to follow it up. What did you see?
Okay. So, yeah, really tough competition, I thought, for the pitchers. The Daichi Osero went 4-1 with a 2.25 ERA, led the league with 34 strikeouts, but he pitched a whole zillion innings.
Yes.
And then, but I think the guy, well, of course, then we've got another one, which is we've got Taisei Ota. Now, if you save 11 games, typically they're going to give it to you, but they usually only give it to the relievers when they have an ERA of 0, although they did give it to somebody last year, I think. I mean, I remember the day when they didn't give it to relievers at all. If there were starting pitchers who won two games, no reliever was going to get it.
Yeah, you get out of here with your one inning stints. Take a hike, you know. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. We'll call you when we want somebody who can't go the distance.
Or yeah, somebody's in a pool and we need you to save them. That's when we'll call you, Mr. Savior.
Something like that. But he had a 2.08 ERA, so. That's going to be an interesting one. I think he was perfect. I mean, he had like one bad inning. He had a couple of games where he gave up one run and three run, with a three run lead. Mm-hmm. But he was 11 for 11 in save opportunities. And he won the other game that was tied. And the only game which he didn't get a decision in was a game the Giants won like 8-2 or something. It wasn't a save situation. So I don't know. You can do a lot better than that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he won. I don't know if there's any favoritism towards the Giants. I would be surprised if the Giants aren't upset that there's not favoritism towards the Giants, but I don't know if there is.
Yeah. I think a lot of that has been wearing off the past 5-10 years, but yeah, I had Taisei up there as well. Alan Cudi up there because his numbers were fairly good, but I also had Mercedes. And the thing I thought about when I was going through this was the Central League just hasn't had that kind of pitcher who's just winning every game and has been dominating. Even Masato Morishita of the Carp, he was 3-1, but his ERA is kind of up there. So when I thought for a second, I thought, wait a second, it's Ota. It's Taisei Ota of the Giants. He's the 11 saves, fastest in club history. That's another thing to keep in mind is that he set a record, fastest in club history for a rookie. And he had a high K rate and his whip was under 1. So I think he's going to actually get it. I don't think.
Well, he set a Giants record for rookie saves because the Giants were one of two teams that basically never let their rookie pitchers close.
Oh, well, the point being for me is that he's got record next to his name. And some people, they don't care about all that stuff. And they don't even know about all that stuff. They just hear record and they're like, oh, record. And he has 11 saves. So maybe that's enough for them. So I think he's going to get it.
I would not be unhappy if he got it. I mean, I think that's fine. If Osera got it and Mercedes, he got it, But they're not. I think the thing is that there might be a little bit of, well, we've got all these pitchers with similar stuff. And Akoyo Aoyagi also had a really good run. He didn't have the wins, but he was really good. So a lot of guys did really well, but we have the guy with 11 saves, and he's a rookie, and he plays for the Giants, and, why not?
Give it to him. What about hitters?
Okay, hitters, interesting. Now, here we get to the stuff of opportunities and results. Shugo Maki led the CL in slugging average and on-base percentage. Okay. So normally that's, over a long period of time, that's really, really good. But the problem was he scored 10 runs because nobody was driving him in, even though he was on base all the time. And he drove in just 13 because nobody was on base in front of him.
Right.
So I'm going to give the vote that I don't have to Kazuma Okamoto.
Yeah.
Who was third in runs scored, first in homers and RBIs. And then I had Mune Taka Murakami coming up after him. So, but well, I
get out of my brain, Jim Allen. Yeah, that's what I had. I had Okamoto and I had Murakami, and I had Maki in consideration because of the high batting average. But you're right, and also he had the highest OPS. He was over 1,000 with OPS.
Well, that usually happens when you lead the league in slugging average and on base percentage.
Yeah, but they don't really count that stuff. I don't think they worry.
No, they do.
They even know about it.
Well, they do know. It's sad. That was the thing I mentioned, is they actually mention that stuff now. It used to be runs. What runs? We only care who drives in runs. You know, it's like a colleague who once said, scoring runs is irrelevant. It's all about who drives them in. They're the people who do all the work.
Yeah, right. All you have to do is walk home. Mm-hmm. I'll drive you home, but you got to walk the rest of the way somehow.
Tell Adam Walker that. And not a play on his name, but boy, he scored a big run today.
Yeah, well, it was big for a while.
Well, I mean, it was big in the sense that if he hadn't done the extra work and run the bases really, really well, it wouldn't have happened and we wouldn't have had the game we had. So
correct. Yeah. So yeah, those are the guys I have. I actually think Okamoto is going to win it. So I don't think it's much of a,
well, good for him. I mean, he certainly deserved it. Although I'll have to say this. I remembered because the Giants were leading, I watched a lot of Giants games this week. And I remembered why, when I first came to Japan, I really began to dislike the Giants. And it's and I'll tell you why. It's because of the constant NTV hyperbole. They cannot shut up about how wonderful the Giants are, even when they're lousy. You know, Adam Walker hit a home run the other day when the Giants got the they got the beans kicked out of them in Hiroshima one day, and Adam Walker hit a home run. He says, "There's the Giants showing their strength." I'm going like, you know, things like that. And, oh, it's just incredible how, you know, how good the Giants are. And one, we had a comment the other day where one of the announcers said, "That was really a close pitch that he took." And the analyst said, "Calm down, son. It wasn't even close."
There you go.
So that's but that's the way it used to be back in the day. It used to probably even be worse.
Yep.
So, and I haven't listened to a lot. I haven't watched a lot of Giants games recently, but that week probably cured me of any desire to watch the Giants.
All right. Well, you're going to have to watch them more.
I know. I'll turn off the volume, maybe.
All right. Let's make a one-seam transition and hit our Rockin' with Roki segment. So Roki Sasaki was coming back from being deactivated for some rest reasons, basically, and he got the start on Friday at home, and that was against the SoftBank Hawks. Like I said, I was basically focused mostly on the Perfecto going on in Nagoya, so I didn't actually see much of this game. And you said you were fixated on it, right? So Sasaki threw six innings. He struck out 11, but he gave up six hits and walked one. And I saw some note on Twitter. I'm not sure if it was you or someone else, but they said he was basically around 99 with his fastball all night and pitched through whatever issues he had with not being able to locate everything. But what did you see?
Well, I tweeted that. Yeah, his average of velocity was 161.62 on the fastball. That's over 100. His average velocity was over 100. I think it was 100.4 miles per hour. Okay. His location was not great. He had a stretch where some of the fastballs were flat, and then after he gave up a couple of hits in his hardest inning, he came back the next one like, "Oh man, I'll show you guys." And the velocity went down, but I think his spin rate went up because nobody could touch it. So that was the fastest, the fastest he's thrown in a single start in his career. So give the guy 11 days rest, and I'm curious to see what he's going to do on Friday. You know, go back to Osaka, and he's not on his regular mound that he likes in Chiba, so that'll be different. But
I did notice that he, you know, some of the highlights that I saw, he was firing it. We have an article coming out in our paper that I helped rewrite that talks about how the team has worked with him and is being, especially what we talked about in the interview with Bobby, they're thinking about his future. Mm-hmm. They're not just thinking about what they can get from this asset. And so it's talked about no max effort pitching. Mm. They don't want him throwing max effort. And right. I thought that was an interesting thing. So I did see him fire some pitches, but you're right. He just has a smooth delivery. They've made it mechanically smooth, and he doesn't have to fire at max effort to get that high. So you're sitting over 100 for the game. So that's quite impressive. And again, he probably could have won the game, but Naoya Masuda, the closer, gave up a home run in the ninth inning, and the score got tied, and eventually the Hawks came back and won that game. So he didn't get anything out of it, but a no decision. But
yeah, really good pitcher's duel with Kodai Senga. And I think this is something we'll see more of. We'll see guys in the same way when Masahiro Tanaka came back last year and everybody playing against him was really, you know, they wanted to show that they could, you know, hang with the big leaguer.
Right.
You know, keep pace. Well, I don't mean hang in that sense, but hang in the game with them, you know, okay, you know, stay in the game, be competitive. And I think these right. guys pitching against Sasaki are like, I'm going to, you know, everyone's watching this game, you know, even Jim's watching this game when there's a better one going on somewhere else. So I guess,
that's
yes.
right.
go ahead.
All right. And one note, the Giants lost their middle infield. Basically, their captain, Hayato Sakamoto, was removed mm-hmm. from the roster with an injury. And then Naoki Yoshikawa went out with an injury. And they started to lose some games this past week. And I know those are just two guys. And one of them is a leader and was the main cog, I would say, in the lineup. And the other is a second baseman who gets toyed with by the manager a lot, but those are two really good defensive players. And even though they're not pitching, I know it impacts the pitching mm-hmm. and that might be one of the reasons they had a bad week. So once they get over that, I think they'll get back on their feet. Plus I think they get to play some teams that are below them in the standings. So that'll also help. So,
well, there are fewer teams below them in the standings than there were a week ago. They only got three below them now.
Yeah, that's what happens when you lose. Yeah. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this one comes from Billy. I don't know where he lives, but it comes via email. He says, love the show, longtime listener, first time caller, he jokes. Anyway, despite the fact that I'm a big Swallows fan, diehard Royals fan, so I'll always support Norichika Aoki. I love watching the amazing talent around MPB, and because the MPB can't get around to a combined international streaming service, I can only watch Pacific League games. Thanks for the YouTube English channel captions, John. And one of those talents is obviously Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Oryx Buffaloes. Now, after his last start against SoftBank, which was one of the worst of his career, I've been thinking about perhaps why. If I remember correctly, wasn't he a bit slow in his terms at the beginning of last season and pushed the team to be thrown every fifth game? The pitching in the Olympics and Oryx going six games in the Japan series, then he threw 193.2 innings for the Buffaloes last season. That's a lot of baseball for a young guy. And while his last few starts were still very good, his prior start was 116 pitch, seven inning outing with 10 strikeouts and 2 earned runs. And the start before that, he threw 122 pitches in 7 innings with 2 earned runs and 5 walks. Now, he gave up the grand slam to Yanagita at 123 pitches in the 6th. He's throwing a ton of pitches, but still only getting to the 6th or 7th innings. What do you think of Yoshinobu's 2022 so far? Is the SoftBank start a blip, or is there a real cause for concern? Love the show. You're the soundtrack for my Monday morning workout each week. I'm curious which NPB gear John wouldn't allow in his house. Thanks, Billy. I'll never tell. Jim, what do you got there?
Well, I'll tell. Wait, okay. This is... Oh, no, I got no, censored there. Okay. Okay. I think, giving up a home run and particularly that home run to Yuki Yanagita, you know, blaming that... It wasn't the home run that was the problem. It was all the guys on base. because Unagi is just is kind of a force of nature. I mean, how many times have we seen him hit home runs that he's like, either A, that's going to be foul, or that's going to be an easy fly out to left field, so I'm not even going to look at it. He's just like standing there at the batter's butt. Oh, I better start circling and getting my home run trot on. Because he hits these balls that really have no business being home runs, but he does it. He's so strong and he has such a beautiful swing that he can miss balls and club them. So, you know, the problem is having the bases loaded is the big problem. And yes, his command has not been all that sharp this year. I think his fastball is not as good as it was last year's cutter. I mean, last year he could pretty much throw his fastball and his cutter the whole time. Like my friend Hiroshi Gondo said about Roki Sasaki, you know, he doesn't need to throw pitches out of the zone. All he's got to do is mix up his fastball and his splitter and no one's going to hit him.
Right.
And last year it was like that with in the last couple of years, it's been pretty much like that with Yamamoto. If he throws his fastball and cutter and throws a splitter now and then, and it's a really good splitter, he's going to be unhittable. But the fastball and the cutter have not, especially the cutter, has not been what it was last year. It hasn't been moving. The fastball hasn't been jumping that much. And his command has been a little poorer. So that's what I've seen. Is it a sign? You know, I don't know what you mean by a sign, like crop circles or something. I don't know. But yeah, maybe he did have a slow start last year. I don't think it's the end of the road. They did send him down probably to get some, I'm not certain if Oryx sent him down to the farm team to get rest or to be with the rest of the team that's on COVID, you know, quarantine.
Right.
You know, to go see his buddies and get some mental support, because it seems like half of the Buffaloes are in the farm team right now. But I don't know if there's anything to it or not. I guess time will tell.
Yeah, I don't always worry about velocity being down that much, but it might be in this case. He has thrown a lot of innings. It is a lot of baseball. If you remember his first couple seasons, he pitched out of the bullpen. It wasn't really until 2019 that he started he began starting. And so if you count 19, 20, and 21, this is just his fourth season. And as you might have heard, or you might recall, Billy, in the offseason, we had that interview with Alex Ramirez in which I said, look, I try to share my thoughts about development in that it really never ends. And so for a guy to be consistent year over year, that person has to actually improve. And, you know, you can't do the same thing and expect the same results every year. You have to adjust because the opponents are coming after you, especially if you beat their heads in like he has done. So it might be a combination of, you know, all these things, a little bit less, of the velocity slowing down, a little bit of fatigue and him not doing enough in terms of adjustments. But I don't believe that he's not doing enough. He seems highly competitive. So he might just need some rest. And this might not be what we're going to see for this season. It just might be what we're seeing at this portion of the season. So I would keep those things in mind. But, you know, velocity doesn't bother me, it being down, because the really good pitchers, they're not always getting you out with velocity all the time. They're getting you out with everything that they do on the mound, not just, you know, just any way that they can throw the timing off and then hit their spots and make you either swing at balls or not swing at strikes. So that's, you know, it's not all about, nobody's up there. In fact, I don't think Yamamoto's out there throwing the, you know, 99, 100 all the time anyway. He's just a really smart pitcher and he's able to hit spots and he's able to get really good movement on his pitches. He's got really good shape to his pitches too. So it might just be he needs some rest and we'll see about that. And hopefully the team gives him the rest. But if they're not winning, it forces the managers to probably think and look at how they can get into the win column as quickly as possible. And a lot of times that's using their best players. So rest probably isn't on the, unless he gets COVID or quote, unquote COVID. All right. Mm-hmm. Our next question is from Glenn in Tokyo, and he's got a Dragons question for me. He says, cheers for the fabulous pod. As always, was reading an article about Akira Naio today, and it made me wonder what your take on him has been so far. His popularity amongst the Dragon faithful makes you think he's a rising star, but he is barely getting off the bench this season. He's in the minors. Has management decided he has peaked at 21? More flash than Pan? The article made it sound like he is already overthinking things at the plate. I would have thought he was on the perfect team to get the at-bats that he needs to develop. So forget Sasaki. As a Tigers fan, I think we should limit Fujinami to 20 to 30 pitches a season. I'm joking, Glenn. So I'm pretty sure this question was directed at me, and I'm not sure what article you read. I tried to do a search on some articles, and I didn't really find anything, but I have seen a lot of things on YouTube about him. In fact, today, Naio started a game at shortstop and had a couple of hits, and then he pitched an inning. And so that's weird. And we saw Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, the manager, as Jim referred to or stated earlier, he said, made his shortstop disappear this week. And that was, he yanked Yota Kyoda out of a game at Yokohama after a ball went through up the middle that I thought was basically off the bat. I thought it was a single. And you know that carpet up there at Yokohama or over there at Yokohama helps balls scoot through the infield. So I thought it was really unfair.
It was a deflection off the pitcher's glove too. I mean, so the ball changed direction and he got it in his glove and he like looked to see where he's making the throw and he dropped it.
Yeah. So. And I liked the defense Kyoto has been playing this season, but I don't think Tatsunami does because he pulled him from a game earlier this season for no reason at the end of the game. Of course, his bat, I think most of it is probably Tatsunami not liking the way Kyoda is batting, and that therefore he can't do anything right on the field if you don't. I think Tatsunami was a left-handed batter. Kyoda is the same. He's a left-handed batter, throws right, so he's the same in his manager. And if he's not listening and he's not taking the advice, or he's not putting it into action, or he's not getting enough results, I think that's why he is being picked on. I don't know. I'm on the outside. I haven't seen. I just can go on what I've seen. And like I said, I've seen him yanked before, and now they were sent to the minors. So that game today that Naio started at shortstop, Kyoto was at second. So it's just weird. And the love for this Naio kid for no reason among the faithful that you speak of is real. I don't know why. He hasn't done anything as a pro. And again, the hits he got today, one was kind of a bloopish, kind of a double. I think today, I'm sorry, I didn't see the ones from today. Maybe I think I saw he had another two-hit game. And one of them, he lined a double to left. So that's the opposite way. The other one was he dropped a single into left that kind of looked foul off the bat, but it stayed fair. So he's not exactly tearing the ball off the cover per se, but it looks like they're going to give him a chance to do something. And if he can be a two-way guy, great. He didn't pitch all that well, I don't think, today, but it was his first outing, I believe. So we'll see how that develops. I have no idea why I don't think he has peaked. Okay. And 21, I don't think we've seen enough of him to say that he has peaked. But in terms of development, again, everybody goes at their own pace. We've seen Ishikawa up at the top level. He hit a home run today, his fifth. I think he's leading the team in home runs already. So that's either the Dragons are really, really bad or he's developing. I'm sorry, bad at hitting home runs, or he's developing faster or at a really good pace this season. So I think it's a little of both. But in terms of Naio, I don't know. We just haven't seen enough of him this year. And I did talk about him in the prediction show about how Hiromitsu Ochiai, the manager for the Dragons who got them their Japan Series championship in 2007, talked about Naio's stubbornness and how he doesn't like to listen to others. So that's a factor. But if he can get to the shortstop position and hit 230 to 250, I think they would love that. And as long as he's listening to his manager will love him. So what have you heard, Jim?
Well, I saw the one when they said, basically, we got a bunch of outfielders. I do not need him in the outfield. And especially Tatsunami said, This was about 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago. And he said, you know, the way he plays the outfield really makes me think he'd be good at shortstop. You know, which is a which is kind of like a left-handed hitter's compliment, I suppose.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, wow, he's the kind of first base, you know, he's the kind of first baseman that makes you think he might be a better DH.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Let's get him out of there. And I had heard that he practiced in the bullpen in the spring and he was going to be used. He was on standby to be in an emergency pitcher this year.
Right, we saw that.
So, but I'm still surprised that they actually used him in a Western League game. I'd be surprised if that's not the front page story in the Chunichi Sports tomorrow.
Probably, although, like I said, he wasn't great. He wasn't awful, but he wasn't great. So we'll see. It might say that he's a two-way player. That'd be the headline. Two-way Neo.
That's right. Well, indeed.
Well, he might be no way if he doesn't start hitting. unless he can really pitch. But anyway, so that's all I got on that. I know he's really popular. I don't know why, but I would like to see him do something first. Ishikawa is a really good-looking guy, too, not to mention that he can hit home runs. So if he, you know, hits 250 and hits 15 home runs this season, I bet he'll be on the front of the tickets for his face will be prominent on the tickets that they sell for opening day next year, because he's a really handsome little young man. So I think Neo will get passed by very quickly if he doesn't start to do something for that team.
Yeah, well, Neo's, you know, he's had this weird career progressions. Of course, he was also highly sought after number one pick, and the Dragons scooped him up. Other teams wanted him as well.
Right.
And Ishikawa was as well. They were both highly sought after. They had to both win them both in draft day lotteries. And they both basically did nothing in their rookie year. Of course, Neo it was because he was hurt all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he got hurt and then he came back and he kept getting hurt again. And I'm going, well, that's weird. You know, that is weird. I do like, you know, he's got physically, he's got terrific tools, but you know, you got to use them.
So, yeah.
And I do like Ishikawa. I like him both as a fielder and a hitter. So, okay.
Yeah. He's a really good fielder. Well, Glenn, thank you so much for the question. Billy, thank you for the question. We've got one more on deck, but anyone else that has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Leave us a note, a criticism, a suggestion, anything you want to on the Facebook page. And look for us on iTunes and on Google Play. And we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.